It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, Ebro, riding co-pilot, as always, on this awesome week one edition of Fade the Chalk. Is my co-host Adam Pfeiffer. Look, we made it, man. Off season. All these weeks and days are gone. It's time, baby. It's kickoff time. Adam, what's up, man?
I am very excited. I woke up today and I realized that there's football on this week and on the weekend. And I'm just thrilled to be doing this podcast in general, but especially now that we have live football coming our way, and the content that we have at FTN is, I looked at the schedule last night, it is absurd. It is absolutely absurd. So we're riding high right now, and it's a very exciting time. And if you're following FTN, you will not be able to get to a point where you're like, oh, I don't have anything to read or listen to or watch, because we are loaded.
It is go time, man. I mean, look, the content schedule is going to be jam-packed. Adam and I are still rocking three episodes a week. So to everybody, for all the previous episodes, this is your first time tuning in, welcome. The weekly schedule is going to be, so Monday, Adam and I are going to dive into waiver wire, giving you our top 10 pickups for the week ahead. On Wednesday, we're going to give you our trade for and trade away players, so our trade for episode. Thursday, it is the game-by-game breakdown. We're going to go through all things DFS. Punts, plays, pivots, stacks, giving you all the things that you need to dominate in DFS, man. So before we kick this episode off, like we talked about last week, we are doing an amazing giveaway. We're going to be giving away a signed Kenny Golladay mini helmet. Two easy steps to get in and to win this bad boy. So you need to go to Chalk Fade on Twitter. Check out the main page for the podcast. RT the pinned tweet that is up there on the giveaway. Rate, review the pod on iTunes, send a screenshot to the Twitter handle, and you're in it, man. You're in it to win it. As soon as we hit 100 reviews on iTunes, we're going to give this beautiful bad boy away. So like we're talking about, on today's episode, Adam and I are going to dive into our top 10 waiver wire targets before week one. So Adam, kick us off here. Who is the guy that you're going to be searching for in the waiver wire in your leagues?
Yeah, and full disclaimer, obviously we haven't had any games yet, so we're kind of basing this off guys that we think are, you know, these guys are all going to be like over 50% or less than 50% rostered in leagues at the moment. And for week one, since there haven't been any games yet, these are some players that we expect and we think could have a really strong week one showing, and you could be really gaining an edge by picking them up now and either starting them if you're in a deeper league or whatever, or putting them on your bench because they profile well for their matchup or the situations in their offenses have changed. So, this is a good way to kind of get a jump start on your league. I'm gonna go with Darrell Williams, the running back in Kansas City. Obviously, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is the really exciting player there. But Darrell Williams, we've gotten reports the last couple days and the last week or so that he is the number two back in this offense, and people have drafted well before that news came out. So, DeAndre Washington was released by the team. He's no longer there. It is Darrell Williams as the number two back. There have already been reports that as soon as week one, which is obviously Thursday, he could get, a split workload in terms of the carries with Clyde Edwards-Helaire as they kind of ease the rookie in. And that's valuable in this Chiefs offense. He was productive when he got the ball last year in Kansas City. I could see him easily being the short yardage back, at least, in the early going. And even in this offense, like, if he gets eight carries a game, like, they're going to be high-value carries in this offense. The Houston matchup is pretty favorable. And not to mention the fact that, do you have the guts? And in week one, there really aren't any injuries, especially since this is the first game of the week. Are you going to need to start Darrell Williams? No, maybe not. But you also might have overlooked the fact that he is the guy to roster if you have Clyde Edwards-Helaire on your team. So he's like 13% owned in ESPN leagues right now. Like, he needs to be added way more regardless, on top of the fact that he could have a productive week one just because it sounds like he's going to get the ball more than we would have thought, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm totally down with that. And the other thing about this is we talk about walking into the season. If you're looking at the guys that are one injury away and the guys that you need to be rostering on your teams, as well as, I mean, Adam and I have been preaching to everybody that has been listening to this all offseason. You don't listen to shower narratives. You follow the drumbeat. And the drumbeat has been consistent at a Chiefs camp that Darrell Williams is the guy that you should be looking at. He's the handcuff to CEH. As well as to point out, if you pick him up right now, and God forbid, he scores two tutties in the first week, you could easily flip him to somebody, even a panic like CEH owner. So
yeah,
I love the 100%. Call here.
I love that. And it's like, you like a lot of players in fantasy, if they have one of those elite running backs, Dalvin Cook, you know, Alvin Kamara, Zeke, you know, I think CEH is going to kind of be right around that tier this year. Like, they not only understand how valuable those players are, but they really also will do whatever. Like, they will give up more than they have to for the backup, for Latavius Murray, for Tony Pollard, for an Alexander Mattison. Like, I've noticed that a lot over the past couple years. And then on the other side, like, Darrell Williams could also be, like you said, there's no Damien Williams who opted out. DeAndre Washington's not there. LeSean McCoy's not there. Like, if anything happens to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Darrell Williams isn't getting, like, the, you know, 12 touches he got when he got some work last year. He's getting all of it. He is, like, legitimately getting all of it. And he would probably be, what? I don't know if he'd be, like, a top 10 guy, but he'd be pretty damn close, I feel like, on a weekly basis, given that offense.
Just because the Chiefs offense, he would be a lock set forget top 20 guy if he was the guy that was garnering even a 60-40 split in that backfield. I mean, people would be ravenous on the waiver.
And we know how reactionary people are. Like, what if Darrell Williams in week one on Thursday night has 11 carries for 40 yards and two touchdowns, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire has like 15 touches, you know, six receptions, whatever, but doesn't score? People are going to be like, oh my God, like they're going to lose their crap like they do all the time. Like everybody always does in week one. You know, they think, oh, you know, they're not going to use Clyde Edwards-Helaire as they said. Like, so like you can take advantage of a panicking CEH owner and just say, okay, here's Darrell Williams. You know, what do you clearly need this backup. What are you going to give me?
Yep. I mean, I think it's a great call. And staying in that game, I've got to get Randall Cobb in here. He's only 22% rostered on ESPN. And staying on this contest, like, this game is the highest total game right now on the slate at 54. You have Houston. We've talked about we want all parts or pieces to buy into this offense. Everybody knows the injury risk that Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller present. So that is not anything new. But if you look at the Texans, they're going to use more 11 personnel. I mean, they showed us that last year with even DeAndre Carter, Kiki Kuti, who is now like just bench fodder. They went from 11 personnel, they ran at 57% in 2018, up to 64% last year. And I think that even bumps up higher this year. And if you look at Randall Cobb, he is not a world beater, but as a guy that's going to be running out of the slot, he showed us last year for the Cowboys that he has still got legs. He could still be super productive versus zone coverage. As a slot wide receiver last year, caught 50 of his 74 targets, had a 108 QBR and all three of his touchdowns. So as a guy that if either one of those top receivers go out in week one, they either get hurt, injured, or you're looking at least for a flex play that is going to garner targets and be a large part of their offense. I think Randall Cobb is a fantastic target. If you want to go back and listen to the previous episode, I talked about Randall Cobb as being a guy that over on prizepicks.com, you can make some money there. Randall Cobb's line is 9 points. 9 points in PPR scoring?
I was about to say, and again, that's PPR scoring.
Yes, so he gets into the end zone, he is absolutely going to smash that. So I think that he's worth a pickup, garnering where he can fit into this offense, and especially if you're looking for a desperation flex play, Randall Cobb is a great target for week one. So Adam, who's your next guy here?
Yeah, I love the Randall Cobb call because as much as we love Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller this year, we'd be, you know, morons to just completely overlook the fact that they have legitimate injury red flags. And I think a big reason why DeAndre Hopkins last year wasn't being used downfield a lot compared to previous years is because they didn't have any sort of consistency out of their slot. Like, they were playing Hopkins a lot more inside because the beginning of the season, it was Kenny Stills by default, who's not an interior receiver. And then, like you said, Kiki Cutie was you know, barely playing. And then when he did play, he would be in Bill O'Brien's doghouse and he would come out. So you look into this season and it's the same thing. Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller are better on the outside. And Randall Cobb's going to be that, you know, middle of the field guy. And the tight ends, like, yeah, they had some production and scoring last year, but they're not going to be guys you target consistently, you know, when you're driving down the field. So I like the Randall Cobb call. I'm going to, you know, one of the faces of the podcast for the offseason, Irv Smith, tight end of the Minnesota Vikings, just 12.2% rostered in ESPN leagues. We both believe that's going to change regardless this year, no matter when. But you look at this week one matchup against Green Bay, the way their team and the way the Vikings kind of shape out right now, Adam Thielen's obviously the alpha. He's going to get as many targets as he can handle this year, but they have a pretty damn good corner in Jaire Alexander, who's probably going to follow him for the most part, I would imagine. Like, the problem last year was, you know, you could, if you followed one of the guys, I mean, the other guy was, you know, an elite receiver, whether it was Diggs or Thielen. So I think Thielen is still going to be great this year, obviously, but that's going to lead to more opportunities for Irv Smith. We talked about the fact that Stephon Diggs had nearly 100 targets last year that need to be replaced. Justin Jefferson is a really talented player, but he has not wowed the Vikings in camp or anything to the point where it looks like BC Johnson might open this season as the number two receiver. And if that's kind of where you're at in terms of receiving core, like, Irv Smith, they've experimented using him out wide. You talked about his numbers when he was lined up out wide. They were really productive. And I just think I think this is going to get to a point this year, and it might even start right away, where Kyle Rudolph is doing, you know, he's going to block as much as any tight end in the league already, but it might just also lead to less routes, and they kind of use Irv Smith as their, their route runner, and just have him make plays because they need playmakers on the outside of Adam Thielen. So I think this is a guy that there is a legitimate possibility he's going to be a set it and forget it top 12 guy every week. And look, we've been drafting him on our benches in any league we could probably get in. And I think Irv Smith is going to be a guy that you want at least on your bench if you don't have, you know, a Kittle, Kelce, Mark Andrews, Zach Ertz. Like, honestly, if I don't have one of those tight ends, I want Irv Smith on my bench because there's question marks with everybody else. Evan Ingram, massive upside, injury history. I can go, you know, on and on with the tight end position. We like the tight end position, but outside, that's why they're the big four, is because they're better and safer than everybody else. So honestly, if you don't have Andrews, Kelce, Kittle, or Ertz, I want Irv Smith on my bench.
Well, I can even make you a point to even that, even if you do have one of those elite tight ends, rostering Irv Smith is costing you nothing.
Yeah, too.
Nobody is going to, like, bid him up on Fab. And the other thing about it is, if you have one of those elite tight ends, you know you're not going to be struggling for a starter. Like, you're going to rock one of those guys every single week. You pick up Irv Smith and he goes off on week one, it's trade bait, dude. Like, you can flip him for some other roster spot that you really need to impact for your starting lineup. Like, it's just, you want to produce and churn that equity for your roster every single week. And we know the upside. We've talked about it all offseason. Especially if you could get him at nothing right now and he blows up, I think that there's upside whether you have one of those tight ends and you really are going to lean on Irv Smith, or even you have the elite tight end and you're just going to flip him to help your roster even more down the line.
And I think, like, at the end of the day, like, I talk about it all the time. I love stats. I love advanced stats. My work, my articles, and the podcast, I'm going to use a lot of stats to correlate with stuff. But at the end of the day, listen to what teams are telling us. I mean, like, in the same time frame where the Vikings were saying that Justin Jefferson hasn't been wowing them, he hasn't really taken you know, the lead for that number two receiver, and that BC Johnson might start, in the same time frame, they're talking about, we're experimenting Irv Smith out wide. I don't think that's a coincidence. He's going to have a much larger role as a pass catcher this year, regardless, because Stephon Diggs is gone. And, I mean, you've talked about it, we've talked about it, the physical profile and the ability and how young he is, there is so much upside with Irv Smith. And then, not to mention the fact, if anything happens to Kyle Rudolph, then you're feeling pretty damn good about Irv Smith from week on and week out.
So moving over to the next game, and Adam and I have a lot of targets. Like, four out of our 10 total players in this episode are coming from this week one game. So Jacksonville versus Indy. I have a lot of Colts that I have talked about all offseason, and I'm still staying there for this episode. So Jack Doyle and Paris Campbell, I think are guys that you need to be looking at and getting them on your team, because this Colts passing offense is being undersold all offseason. I think they are going to run faster. I think they are going to throw more than people are giving them credit for. If you look at the matchups for these two players walking into this week one contest, Jack Doyle is only rostered in 38% of ESPN leagues. Paris is only rostered in 31%. You look at their matchups going against Jacksonville. So Jack Doyle, over the last two seasons, his role in this offense is going to be juicy. Like, the tight end position has led this team in red zone targets with Ebron or Doyle over the last two seasons. Jacksonville is, we've talked about, they are not going to be an improved defense. They were 30th in DVOA versus the tight end position last year, and some of their counting stats are being undersold because they didn't face teams that were consistently utilizing the tight end position. But when they did, whew, they gave it up, dude. Versus the Chargers, 53 receiving yards, 2 touchdowns. Darren Waller ripped them apart for 8 receptions and 122 yards. Austin Hooper, 7 for 82. Delanie Walker and his old butt, 7 for 64. He didn't get in the end zone, but what I'm talking about here is Jack Doyle, for all the unsexy stat lines, I think could garner a healthy target share and a red zone role in this contest. Moving over to Paris Campbell, he is going to be matched up, at least as of right now, what we're staring at, a rookie in C.J. Henderson in the slot. Jacksonville, near bottom of the league, an explosive pass rate allowed last year. And that is going to be right in Paris Campbell's wheelhouse. 4-3 speed in the slot, short area targets. We are talking about Yak for days. That is a guy that I want on all of my teams. You can go back to listen to multiple episodes. I have talked about Paris Campbell every single time I have had a chance to. The camp buzz and the drum beat, like we were talking about and preaching here, has been all offseason. When he's been healthy, before the concussion, even after, Phillip Rivers has been peppering him with targets. I think that he could blow up week one. And I know you're going to talk about the Jacksonville side of here, but I think these are two guys that you could either start in week one if you need the starter and you are desperate, as well as they are going to be high priority waiver targets after the week one game.
Yeah, I love Jack Doyle. And T-Bar, you mentioned Jacksonville, you mentioned Paris Campbell. Do you know who allowed the second most yards after the catch in the NFL last year? It's the Jacksonville Jaguars, who were also bottom five or top five, however we want to look at it, in missed tackles. So that bodes well for Paris Campbell. And the other thing with Jack Doyle is, I wrote about it in my overlooked receiving duos a while back at FTN Fantasy. His upside is so much higher with Ebron gone, because you look at the numbers last year. When Ebron was healthy, Doyle was 24th among all tight ends in routes run. He averaged right under 19 per game. But during the final 5 weeks of the year when Ebron was hurt, Doyle ran 139 routes, averaging 28 per game, and his red zone usage obviously climbed too. Now Trey Burton, who they bring in, is going to miss a few games. So like even the fact that they brought in Trey Burton, that doesn't matter, especially for this game. It's Jack Doyle and it's Mo Alie-Cox. So yeah, I love the calls for these two. But these guys are both very affordable and DFS in week one. Going to Jacksonville, though, there's some interesting storylines here. I'm going to stick with Laviska Shenault, because I just think you should be drafting him at the end of your draft in every league. And I understand there's some shallower leagues out there where you don't need to draft him, but I just think he's going to be an absolute playmaker this year for this team. They need him in every facet right now. I think he's just going to be used all over the place, and I think as much as I like him, obviously I'm going to put him here because I think he needs to be rostered more, and he will be after a really impressive week one debut. But James Robinson, I mean, this backfield right now, they trade Leonard Fournette. Apparently there was a report that one of the reasons they felt comfortable trading Leonard Fournette was because of what they saw in James Robinson. Their GM, David Caldwell, said his training camp, Robinson's training camp, played a role in their decision to release Leonard Fournette. That's pretty telling. Now you have Rykel Armstead not available for week one. He's on the COVID list. So James Robinson is probably going to split carries with Ozigbo, but he could easily, at the end of week one, be the starting running back. Yes, it's not the most appealing backfield and situation in fantasy, especially for a team that's going to throw the ball a lot. But at the end of the day, a starting running back on an NFL team is incredibly valuable in fantasy, especially given how bad the running back position is after a certain point. So James Robinson, I mean, he doesn't even have to have a huge game, but if he gets 15 touches, it's all you need to know. And he'll be, you know, he'll be, especially if there's injuries at the running back position in week one, he'll be on the top of a lot of people's lists to pick up after week one because people need running backs, but you could get him right now, put him on your bench, and have a potential starting running back for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, I think you want to be ahead of the curve here. And to your point, Jacksonville, Marone came out and talked to beat writers, and he was like, we got some guys on this roster that have three down skill sets. Reichwell was not mentioned among those running backs.
Right.
It was James Robinson, and it was Ozigbo. So if you're looking at who could be the guy here, I know Ozigbo is getting a lot of ink. I like him, but James Robinson is a wonderful dart to throw prior to week one.
And yeah, like there was a report that Ozigbo and Robinson are going to split carries, but I don't care because I'm picking Robinson up now, putting him on my bench, and not only am I getting some more depth at running back because this is going to be a guy at worst that's going to get, you know, the crack at a starting job, and if he outperforms Ozigbo, he's going to be the starter. You have that on your bench, and you also, you know, take away the opportunity for your opposition to get a potential starting running back. So this is a perfect situation where you get ahead of the eight ball and you make sure that, because if James Robinson has 20 carries in week one, you know, barring some other crazy games from other players, he's going to be a poster boy for a lot of waiver wire articles, and it's going to be a lot tougher to add him to your team. So get ahead of the eight ball now, and that's the whole purpose of this Monday podcast. It really is.
No, absolutely. So I know we've talked a lot about Viska. Why is he making your list here as one of the big guys that you're targeting right now?
I just think, like, he's – I understand I just talked about James Robinson, but I still think Viska's getting some carry. Like, I think he could have a slightly better Robert Woods rushing-type year from a receiver, which is incredibly valuable. And then, yes, James Robinson, I like the fact that he could be a starting running back for this team. But we also still project Jacksonville to be one of the pass-heaviest teams in the NFL. I think LaVisca, especially, they're already talking about, like, D.D. Westbrook was a possible cut candidate before this weekend. I just think they kind of know what they have with D.D. Westbrook and Chris Conley, who are both free agents after the year. They are going to, outside of D.J. Chark, really get creative with ways to use LaVisca Chenault. I do think there's an outside shot, not even that outside of a shot. I think it's legitimately possible. He has the most fantasy points among all rookie receivers this year. I would not be shocked if that happens. I understand the receiver position is deep, so this is more of, like, you know, deeper leagues. I just, you know, I love the player. I love the offense that he's in for fantasy purposes, for volume. You know, the Colts are going to be, like, I think a league average defense. You know, they added, you know, DeForest Buckner to the D-line. Darius Leonard's a really, really good player at linebacker, and they'll probably get more consistency at the safety position with Malik Hooker hopefully staying healthy for the entire year. But I just think this is more of a believer in the talent, believer in the volume for fantasy purposes in a pass-heavy offense. And I just think he's going to be a guy that is going to be rostered a lot more, you know, in a couple weeks. So if I have the bench spot, I'm making sure he's on my bench.
Yeah, I love the call, and I think his versatility in this offense is going to be huge. I think that I won't be surprised if Viska walks out of the year having some kind of, like, really, really Deebo Samuel-esque rookie season where he's dominating after the catch, he's used out of the backfield, and he sneaks in as being a weakly guy that's going to make your starting
really,
lineup.
That's a really good comp, by the way. I could see him being used extremely similarly. The only difference is he's 6'1", 225. You know, like he's a huge, huge player, and he's the man. So I'm all in.
So moving over to another game that we're going to talk about two players to get out of, I think is going to be an underrated offense this year. I'm not moving off of Joshua Kelly. He is getting a lot of steam coming out of camp. The Chargers are talking about all the things that we have talked about all offseason. If you go back to listen to our earliest episodes, heck, our bold calls with Ian Harditz, I told you about Joshua Kelly, and I'm not staying away from that walking into week one because all of these things are still true. He is only rostered in 10% of ESPN leagues. They are taking on an atrocious Bengals defense. They have not improved over the offseason. They were one of the worst defenses for running backs last year. I mean, like, they running backs ate them up, whether it was through the air, on the ground. They were 28th at rushing DVOA, 31st against pass-catching running backs. They allowed the fifth most rushing yards again amongst all teams last year, giving up almost 1,800 rushing yards. So we know the Chargers want to run the dang ball. They are going to do that with Austin Ekeler, yes. But Joshua Kelly, Justin Jackson is banged up. I don't even know if he plays week one. It is going to be the Austin Ekeler and Joshua Kelly show. And if Kelly gets the goal line work, like we're talking about, if he walks out of this week and he gets 12 to 15 touches against a bottom barrel rushing defense and he gets into the end zone, people are going to be swarming to the waiver wire. He is going to be one of the hottest talked about names because he's already getting the buzz in camp. I want Joshua Kelly on every single team that I have. He's already there for me because I'm drafting him. I'm not walking out of a draft without him, but you need to be prioritizing him on waivers right now before he blows up in this game.
Yeah, 100%. I think Austin Ekeler is, like, I think there's this narrative that, you know, smaller running backs aren't goal line backs, which I think sometimes it's just completely opposite because it's harder to see them. They can kind of fit into the smaller spaces. But regardless, Austin Ekeler, first of all, he's not even a small running back. That dude is absolutely jacked. And he was a very productive goal line back last year. But if the Chargers still want to give Josh Kelly that role, or even that role in some regard, this is a great spot for him to convert some touchdowns. I mean, there was only 7 teams last year that allowed over 1 rushing touchdown per game. The Bengals were one of them. Josh Kelly, there were some conflicting reports that it was either him or Justin Jackson that have emerged as a number 2, but it definitely sounds like it's more towards Kelly now. Yeah, I think he's a guy that should have been drafted in most leagues, especially if you drafted Ekeler. And I'm with you, man. I could see him getting, at worst, you know, eight touches in this game, but he can convert 1 or 2 of them into a touchdown. And that's all it takes, especially if Justin Jackson doesn't play, to at least cement himself as the clear backup to Austin Ekeler. So I'm with you. I like the call a lot.
Yeah, so we're staying on the ground game. Why is Tyrod one of the guys that's going to be at the top of your waiver wire priority this week?
Yeah, so this is more in the 2 quarterback leagues or super flex leagues because, you know, as much as I still love Tyrod, the quarterback position is so damn deep. But this is an incredible spot for him. You know, despite what people believe, he's going to start this game. He's going to start the majority of the season, you know, barring a terrible, terrible year from the Chargers or injury. Great spot for him to get off to a good start here. The Bengals allowed 30 rushing yards per game to opposing quarterbacks last year, the most in the NFL. Like you mentioned, their defense really didn't do anything to improve. Tyrod averaged, you know, he was a very productive runner in Buffalo, and who was the offensive coordinator there? It was Anthony Lynn. That's a huge reason why I knew Justin Herbert was not even going to sniff the starting lineup to start the year. Anthony Lynn loves Tyrod. He's familiar with Tyrod, and it's just an easy fit for his offense. You add the fact that I know Mike Williams is expected to miss maybe the entire month of September, but you even take Mike Williams away, and this is still the best group of pass catchers and weapons that Tyrod's ever had. Like, in his prime fantasy years in Buffalo, he was thrown to LeSean McCoy and Charles Clay with a mix of Kelvin Benjamin, who was completely toast at that point, and then Zay Jones and Andre Holmes. Like, Keenan Allen is better than every single player I just listed combined as a pass catcher. Hunter Henry's better than all those players as a pass catcher. And Austin Ekeler is maybe, I mean, what, McCaffrey, Kamara, then Ekeler in terms of pass catching running backs? Like, that's got to be the top 3. Like, he's that good.
Yep.
I just think it's a great spot for Tyrod to get off to a good start and to remind people how valuable rushing is for your floor and upside in fantasy. So, you know, in 2 quarterback leagues or deeper leagues, whatever, I think Tyrod's going to get off to a good start. I think Tyrod's going to be a guy that in this offense you can trust weekly as at worst a floor play. But this is a spot for him to show some ceiling here because Cincinnati was that bad against rushing quarterbacks last season.
Well, and if you went the route of the late round quarterback and you're looking at, okay, who am I going to stream week one? I think Tyrod is a fantastic call as well because we know Cincinnati is going to run a ton of plays. Especially if we're talking about if the Chargers get out to a lead in this game, I think the Bengals are going to run a ton of plays. They're going to push the pace. So as much as we were talking about the Chargers are going to be a run-first offense, if Cincinnati pushes the pace and makes the Chargers run some more plays and get their offense back on the field, I think that this is going to be a really, really sneaky game. And we're going to get this to the game-by-game breakdown on Thursday's episode like we're talking about. This is going to be possibly a really sneaky high-score game that I really am possibly
I don't even know how sneaky it's going to be. I love this game.
Yep, I do too, man. So I love the call on Tyrod. The last player that I got to get up in here is Anthony Miller going against the Lions.
Yes.
He is only rostered in 35% of leagues, and that's egregious. Anthony Miller needs to be pushing above 50%. The fact that I was like, I double take. Like, I had to refresh the screen. I had to look at this.
Let me ask you this before you get started, and I hate to cut you off. But
that's okay.
But if Anthony Miller, you said, what, 35% rostered?
Yep.
He's in that range at receiver where there are – that's the really, really huge cutoff. It's like after the Marvin Jones, Brandon Cooks tier, some of those guys. Who the hell are people drafting over Anthony Miller? I don't get it.
Two defenses? I don't know.
What, like like that range at receiver is pretty bad, and Anthony Miller is really, really intriguing this year to where like I'm legitimately curious, like who are the like I could see maybe like DeSean Jackson now with the Eagles injuries, sure, whatever. But like other than that, like Sammy Watkins, like those, like I'm taking Anthony Miller over all these guys in that range.
Well, once Miller was healthy down the stretch last year, you saw the Bears ran more 11 personnel. We saw Miller have massive ceiling games. And one of those came versus the Lions. Like, he ripped them a new one. Had 13 targets, 9 receptions, 140 yards. And that secondary is not going to be improved. He's still going to go against Justin Coleman, who was one of the worst slot cornerbacks last year. He was targeted 102 times. Allowed 61 receptions, 6 touchdowns. And even if you go back to look at the game, he faced off against Anthony Miller, allowed 5 of his 8 targets to be caught. Miller just dominated in the slot in that game, had 7 of his 10 targets caught in the slot, and I think that he could sit here and garner a lot of usage in this game. We've talked about the Lions' offense. They're going to be good. And if they're pushing the Bears to throw the ball, we know Montgomery's coming in there with a lot of injury concerns into week one. So I think the Bears are going to toss the rock. And with Mitchell Trubisky, he might not be great, but he could be good for Anthony Miller in this game. So he's a guy that you're looking for week one, flex plays. Heck, we're talking about targeting him ahead of your league mates. You need to be rostering Anthony Miller because if he blows up like he did last year versus the Lions, versus the same cornerback he's going to be facing, you're going to be laughing at everybody because you're already going to have him on your squad sitting on the bench. And we're talking about if you already have him and you have a stack roster, you can easily flip him for any other parts or pieces that you need to address for your team walking out of this week.
I love Anthony Miller this week. I'm probably going to have him very, not, I don't want to say like, you know, a ton of exposure because it's still Mitchell Trubisky's offense, but I like him a lot on DraftKings this week as well. And yeah, Mitchell Trubisky is the starting quarterback for Chicago, but he can't be worse than he was last year. And he still targeted the slot at the highest rate among any quarterback in the NFL last year. And Anthony Miller was in the slot around 78% of the time. They don't have anybody other than Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller to catch passes. I mean, I don't think Jimmy Graham is going to be anything special or any of the 7 other tight ends they have. And if Dave Montgomery ends up getting ruled out or isn't 100%, they could easily just kind of use, you know, Tariq Cohen out of the backfield as more of an extension of the run game, and that would just mean they're throwing the ball more. So I like Anthony Miller in general as a guy to have on your bench, but I like him as a play this week too. I really do.
Yeah, I love him right now. So, like Adam and I are talking about, we're going to be doing this waiver wire every single Monday, giving you our top 10 guys to go out, get in your leagues, get on your rosters. So, we are going to be back on Wednesday with our Trade 4 episode, telling you people that you need to be trading for and away, looking at early season schedules and all the things in the context of their offense. So, get subscribed to the pod. Get entered to win the Kenny Golladay helmet. That thing is going to fly off the shelf. We are going to have that thing going out really, really soon because the ratings and reviews are pouring in right now. So we're going to be creeping up to 100 very, very quickly. So for everything and all things, get subscribed to Fade the Chalk. We are going to crush this season. So for Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.